You're listening to a 95BFM podcast.
You needn't be a communist to care about your community.
Don't touch that, it's growing. Be careful, you guys.
Community Garden with Oscar Perez.
Yes, this community garden is a little bit peculiar because we don't have Oscar, but we have Bronnie. How are you?
Good, not a green desk today, but I thought this would be a more fitting section to put this under.
Yeah. So what's happening on the community garden?
Well, this week I spoke to Sophie Jerram, who's an artist and curator from Letting Space, an urban dream brokerage. And she's also soon to be Dr. Sophie Jerram, as she's studying her PhD in landscape on the commoning of land. So I talked to her about the difference between public and common land, and common spaces rather, and as well as her own community activism projects in Auckland and Wellington that she's been involved with since 1993. In more recent years, Sophie has been part of the Vogelmorne Community Group, which started at an old bowling club converted into a community space. This place is actually dear to my heart, as I grew up across the road in Mornington Road, Wellington, and used to go to the space both before and after its conversion from a bowling club. Last week, Sophie spoke as part of an international webinar hosted by the Journal of Public Space called Speculative Cities Thinking Forward. Speakers from a number of countries and disciplines spoke about the way we interact in public space in the current and post-COVID-19 conditions. So I started by asking Sophie about her views on the seminar and what the other speakers had spoken about.
I was really intrigued by how much the rest of the world, because clearly New Zealand's in a slightly different position now, but I was really intrigued as to how they were trying to grapple with this idea of public space online, and they were sort of trying to make the best of a bad situation is what it felt like, because I believe the public space has to be enacted in body. But there was a sort of attempt to sort of try and come to terms with how we could create the same sense of discourse in an online context. And the fact that they didn't, the rest, like the Italians and the Australians, they weren't being optimistic like New Zealand was, and sort of assuming things were going to get back to normal anytime soon. So I guess I came away with the feeling that we're incredibly lucky to be an island nation coming back into the world again.
If we move now to your piece that you gave, I was really interested in, you talked about the difference between public space and common space. And for me, I don't think that's a distinction I've ever heard before. And I was wondering if you could explain kind of what that means and the connotations of each.
The Journal of Public Space held this event, and it was "A Year Without Public Space" was the headline. And they've just, in a way, used public space as a generic term for things that are shared. And for my interest, I'm really trying to distinguish between spaces that are held by communities versus spaces that are held by councils or by other authorities. I guess dating back to the beginning of the kind of neoliberal movement in the 80s in New Zealand, the neoliberal individualistic kind of rational choice model was introduced with this idea that we were going to be freed from the shackles of the state. And somehow, as you all know, the discussion has since that time has been actually we need to push back a little bit on the market, because the market doesn't always come up with the best outcomes for the greatest good. And even this Labor government has particularly been focused on the state versus the market. So it's a duopoly, it has been a duopoly. And I guess what the commons movement tries to introduce, and talking about common space, we're realising that politicians come and go and the market businesses come and go, but actually communities don't come and go. Communities are here to stay. And so in this commons movement, there is a sense that there are three players at least, not just the two, in terms of being political agents of change. And so common space is that which is held by communities, not that that's held by the city. The spaces that we call public space are generally held by city or district councils, or in the case of, say, national parks, they're held and managed by a government ministry. But there are other spaces, like customary Maori land, or all the friends groups that look after rivers and so on, that the spaces that are actually really held and kept and cared for by community groups. So I'm calling them common spaces, as distinct from public space.
I have heard the term commons used in the sort of environmental sense, talking about resources being commons, or rather, natural spaces, like the open seas or the atmosphere could be described as a commons. And I think you were saying that you were inspired by that environmental concept.
Yeah, it was through studying, through working with the sustainability sector and groups like 350 that I realised, the peril of our environmental state, and realised that we've got to find a way in which to keep our resources better managed. And by understanding that we are all part of this global commons, we actually only have one planet, which I'm sure you've heard before, but I mean that sense of how do we actually practice that? How do we practice having one planet? Well, we practice it at a local level and possibly a city and possibly a larger level of co-management and co-holding, I've tried to use the term, in spaces and in resources.
I remember you saying something about how the difference between public space and common space is how the dominant sort of power, political power in society plays into that.
Stavros Stavridis is a really brilliant architect. He's Greek and writes a lot about common space, and he's essentially saying the difference between, say, me and my friends taking over an art gallery, or say taking over a space and calling it an art gallery in an open network commons, is that actually we continue to work at this idea that other people can enter and can take part in the rulemaking, if you like, or the boundaries protection. So essentially, the enclave is the dominant force, and so in the case of the municipal space, so our civic squares and our streets, pretty much they still manage the terms of that. They can alter the space without really needing to consult with a community, so that ultimate authority stays with them. Whereas with a common space, an open network commons, is what Stavros Stavridis would say, is that you're constantly kind of allowing yourself to be challenged. It's not easy.
And so your PhD is in the commoning of land, sort of as a verb. How do you go about making something common from public, I guess?
Well, it does require someone to kind of identify the site and identify that this is a need and the potential. So, if you like, there are three stages. The identification and recognising there's enough people and need for this commons to kind of be created. The second stage is much more about a negotiation. So finding a point of leverage with the authority that already has the site. And then the third stage is once that's been achieved, then there's a whole lot of work in governance that the group who's kind of self-elected to get it going has to do. And that also requires then, as I say, self-reflexivity around, how we're keeping this open. So it's extensive amounts of work and generally mostly voluntary.
Talking about examples of that, I guess for most, when you think about a global financial crisis, it's not necessarily a positive thing. But I know with the 2008 financial crisis, you and your friends managed to actually turn something quite positive out of that in terms of common spaces. I was wondering if you could tell us about that.
Sure. So, yeah, definitely at the time of the financial crisis 2008, there was many companies closed and cities emptied out. So we re-established an organisation that we created in Auckland in 1993. And this is now in Wellington we were working. It's called Letting Space. And essentially we commissioned artists to make works that discussed political, environmental, economic issues because, we sensed that there was something we could still add to the dialogue. And one of the key projects was Kim Patton's Free Store, and Kim Patton's the current director of Object Space in Auckland, and she was fascinated about how much waste there was in food production and wanted to not create a food bank so much as to create an opportunity for people to see the waste and then take it away and obviously use it. So the Free Store has become a permanent project now run by some young guys next to a church in Willis Street in Wellington. But the project also had a time in Auckland out west. But there have been several projects since that moment which have attempted to work in empty shops, and then we set up something called the Urban Green Brokerage where anybody could propose an idea, and we had a panel of property developers, even urban planners, artists and mana whenua representation to consider the ideas, and then we would go and find spaces for them. So that project was funded by Wellington City Council until 2 years ago. Dunedin is still running the project we started, and Masterton and Porirua also had a go at that. So the kind of idea of recommoning spaces has continued on.
And so with a likely pending another financial crisis, do you think that there could be a possibility for more spaces like this to be popping up?
Yeah, well, I heavily believe so. And look, if anyone wants to do it in Auckland, there's a lot of information about how to go about it and negotiate with property owners on our website, the urbandreambrokerage.org.nz. But the key for me is now I've seen three recessions. There was the 92, 93 one, and this is 2008 one, and now obviously we're entering another. I'm loath to sort of just jump in and start doing it myself because I think we need to really consider, hang on, where do the artists go when there's not a recession? I think we need to hold the ground more firmly because it's not right to sort of say, okay, artists come in and fill the gaps while things are cheap. But as soon as the value is kind of pull back into the city, people leave and go to smaller places, so they lose their own social capital. So yeah, we're in negotiation right now about how this might roll out again in Wellington. But you know, by all means, it's really good experience for anybody to start talking to property owners and having some fun with all those empty sites.
Totally. I'm sure there's got to be someone out there listening who would take an interest in that. Now, but to turn to something a bit more recent and also local to you now in Wellington, I wonder if you could tell us a little bit about the Vogelmaurne Community Group and how does an underused bowling club turn into a thriving community space?
I guess just in kind of tracking back to what we were just previously talking about in relation to holding space more long term, where I live very much suburban, you can't really call it in the city, but it's 10 minutes by bike from the city, back of Brooklyn, and we noticed friends of mine who involved in theatre, Barbarian Productions, they were living quite close to this bowling club called Vogelmaurne, and said, look, this building's on the market. We need to use it for rehearsal space. It's very handy for their homes. They had young kids and wanted to live and work closer to home. So after 2 or 3 years, we accumulated a group of us around with premise that we may occupy a bowling club. We weren't there to play bowls, we were there to rehearse and host events and have dinners and try and operate it like a community space. So we eventually negotiated quite hard with the trust that had been given the rights to manage the bowling club after it was wound up as a club. He could see that it was a different vibe, that what we're doing as filmmakers and artists and curators and theatre makers, not bowling, but he could see that there was the same spirit of community generation. We eventually managed to buy the building for $1,000 plus a lot of expenses, and it was a really extraordinary moment because it meant that we're not constantly having to pay rent and we're not constantly having to apply to the council to do stuff, which is if we were just operating out of one of their buildings, it would be a different feel. So it's given us a lot more flexibility and security, and it means we can put a bit of our own flavour on things. We're running this weekend a great gig with three local bands in the hall that's opposite the bowling club, and there'll be some local food prepared by our chef Hassan, and it's going to be a kind of fundraiser but kind of get back together for the community. So it's pretty exciting, and that's, I guess, where I see the future going, is if communities can get together and be organised, and they can find ways to hold their own space.
And just finally, I should ask about community activism and how that ties into maybe the Vogelmaurne Community Group.
I essentially think that we've got a real chance at the moment to start renegotiating our role as community. If you can maintain as community this openness and continue to kind of allow your thoughts to be permeated by others and keep open, then there's a chance to be having much more of a say with the partner, whether it's local government or central government or a market player. So I see this, I guess conceptually, that the commoning of Vogelmaurne and the creation of relatively permeable space that others can take part in if they want and people can feel welcome in, now creates a legitimacy for us as a community to then be stronger as community activists. If anything, community activism is very much about demonstrating processes of commoning and taking responsibility for the local rather than leaving it up to your local council or your community board, and seeing that you are very much a part of, having a good time in your community, you can do that. And so something I like to say to my kids, don't make a complaint unless you're going to make a proposal. Mm-hmm. And that's sort of how I think we need to be. If you identify the problem in the community, then it's good to be able to come up with some solutions too. Not necessarily do it alone. So we're learning to be community activists together. That takes time as well as patience.
That was Sophie Jerram from Letting Space, the Urban Dream Brokerage, and most recently the Vogelmaurne Community Group. You heard Sophie talk about her friends that encouraged her to get on board with the Vogelmaurne Community Group as Barbarian Productions, and you may recognise that name as husband and wife duo Joe Randerson and Thomas LaHood, who, for you regular listeners, you may have heard speak to Zoe on the station before on the stage direction segment about their plays like Soft and Hard and Sing It to My Face. You can find the Vogelmaurne Community Group on Facebook, or if you're interested in what Sophie was talking about converting a space up here in Auckland into your own public space, their website where you can find negotiation tips and other resources is lettingspace.org.nz.
I can't reach the potatoes!
Community Garden with Oscar Perez.
I'm going to name this one Cynthia.
Go forth and prosper.
95BFM podcast. To hear more, head to 95BFM.com/bcasts.